Our scripture reading is from two passages this morning, first from Colossians chapter 3. Do not lie to one another, seeing that you have put off the old self with its practices, and have put on the new self, which is being renewed in knowledge after the image of its creator. Here there is not Greek and Jew, circumcised and uncircumcised, barbarian, Scythian, slave, free, but Christ is all and in all. Put on then as God's chosen ones, holy and beloved, compassionate hearts, kindness, humility, meekness, and patience, bearing with one another, and if one has a complaint against another, forgiving each other as the Lord has forgiven you, so you also must forgive. And above all these, put on love, which binds everything together in perfect harmony. And let the peace of Christ rule in your hearts, to which indeed you were called in one body. And be thankful that the word of Christ dwell in you richly, teaching and admonishing one another in all wisdom, singing psalms and hymns and spiritual songs with thankfulness in your hearts to God. And whatever you do, in word or deed, do everything in the name of the Lord Jesus, giving thanks to God the Father through him. And then from Amos chapter 5. But let justice roll down like a river, righteousness like a never-failing stream. As part of our Justice Week emphasis, we thought it would be appropriate to have two students who participated in what we usually refer to as the Civil Rights Bus Tour. Professor Todd Allen began this tour of civil rights sites over a decade ago and takes 30 to 40 people every year. And this year, several of us were able to be present and be on the tour for about 8 days, traveling about 2,400 miles and visiting major civil rights sites throughout the South. And two students were able to participate, Tanya Gillette and Seth Dunn. And we've asked them to come and share their experience. So, Tanya, welcome.
Good morning. I want you to know first off that I'm absolutely terrified to be up here. But as scared as I am, I'm even more terrified about not speaking and not voicing this message at all. Most of you probably know what it is that I'm going to be talking about. I mean, it is Justice Week after all. And you've seen the posters all over campus, the justice strung out through Alex's. I mean, it's even on the front of your chapel bulletin. But while I was preparing to speak today, I realize that many of you may have very negative opinions towards the topics of justice, overcoming prejudices, and racial reconciliation, not necessarily because you don't believe in the issues, but simply because you think them to be over-talked about and no longer really relevant in today's society. Well, friends, I have a confession to make. I used to be the same way. Now, you're probably thinking, well, then why are you up here? Somebody get her off the stage. But if you will listen, I want to share the message with you that I learned this summer. And in a nutshell, it's this. Wake up. If we feel as though we have nothing to fight for, then we desperately need to be awakened. As Dr. Smith was saying, I had the opportunity at the beginning of the summer to go on a trip to learn about the civil rights movement. What I expected to get out of this trip was to meet some new people and to have a fun and educational experience. I went to learn about the past, not to change my present or my future, and I in no way expected this trip to greatly impact the way in which I viewed myself, others, and the world around me. I mean, I already knew about Rosa Parks and Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. How much more could there really be? Well, a whole lot, actually. Even when I first looked at the itinerary for the trip, I realized that it would completely blow my expectations out of the water. And then when I went, I heard stories firsthand from survivors of the movement. I was shocked and heartbroken to hear of the horrors that were just everyday struggles for the African American people. One person that we met with on the trip was Mrs. Juanita Abernathy, who was the wife of Reverend Ralph Abernathy, a critical person in the movement, and Dr. King's closest friend. She told us of the hardship she faced for standing up for equality, including the time when her home was bombed. When they bombed my house, I had a 2-year-old and was expecting another baby, she said. I heard the bombs go off, and I went to the front door, but the whole front of the house was gone. Bricks and plaster were everywhere. If the bomb had been placed 1 inch over, it would have hit my gas line, and I would have gone up in smoke. Another time, she was at a march in Jackson, Mississippi, and a policeman drew a white chalk line on the ground, saying that blacks could not cross it. Mrs. Abernathy's young son had to use the restroom, and when she crossed the line to take him to the bathroom so that he would not soil himself, a police officer yelled at her, saying, "I told you not to cross that line, nigger." She turned and said, "Do what you have to do," and carried her son off to the restroom. Her trust in God was absolutely incredible, as well as her belief in something, such as the equality of all mankind. She shared that it was a daily struggle and that she could not do it in her own strength, saying that she asked God every day to keep her heart from hatred. We also met with Mrs. Carolyn McKinstry, an African-American who lived in Birmingham, Alabama, during the fight for civil rights. She said, "Bombing was a way of life in Birmingham if you happen to be a person of color." She experienced it firsthand, too. In one instance, when she was 14, her church was bombed right between the main service and Sunday school. While she survived, 4 of her friends, all children around her age, were killed. Many others were seriously injured. Mrs. McKinstry said that the bombing was on Sunday, and Monday everyone was back in school. Yet no one talked about it. Parents and teachers pretended it didn't happen. It became a burden to try to understand why the color of skin was so important. One day, however, she felt as though God was calling her to speak up in His name in the areas of racial reconciliation and forgiveness. Both of these women's stories had an incredible impact on me. The fact that they faced horrible difficulties and still remained steadfast in their faith left me standing in both admiration of them, as well as the shame I felt for my own complaints in the trivial things I found to be unfair in my own life. Yet it goes beyond these just being good stories. If it ended with mere feelings of admiration and guilt, then what real impact would they have? After all, it would make it just a thing of the past, right? Just another piece of near-forgotten history. Well, immediately after this trip ended, I began work as a camp counselor, working at a camp for inner-city children. It also was a very new and growing experience, beginning with the fact that for the first time in my life, I became a part of the minority. Coming from a rural area with predominantly white, middle-class people, this was a completely new experience for me. Never in my life had I been discriminated against, but camp was to be different. Sometimes it was just in the small things. Like, I later found out that when I first arrived, some of the male African-American counselors didn't approach me because they didn't think I would know how to talk to black guys. Then there were the differences in worship styles. Coming from a church background where clapping was rarely initiated for fear of things getting a little crazy, I really didn't know how to handle the stomping, swaying, and dancing that was openly practiced during worship. Finally, my campers turned half of the things that I said into a rap. And in case any of you are wondering, no, I cannot rap to save my life. However, none of these things seemed to be a huge deal or proved to be much of a hindrance until week 3 at camp. I was already a bit nervous going into the week, as this was our week with the oldest campers, and I have much more experience working with younger children, but still was not expecting what would happen as I walked into the cabin. Like I did with every other week, I began to introduce myself and explain a few of the basic rules of the camp. But as I started to talk, I was interrupted by one of the campers who looked at me and said, "You're white." Her words caught me off guard a bit. I mean, I am aware of the fact that I'm white. The light skin and hair and my blue eyes kind of gave it away. Did she think that she was telling me something that was unknown to me? So I decided to just smile and say, "Yes, I know." I then tried to return to my little introduction, but she was not done. She instead said, I've never had a white counselor that I've liked, and I don't want you. It was a tough way to start out the week, but I wanted to hope for the best, that she would see that I am more than simply the color of my skin. But in truth, she never did. Every day was challenging, and every night as I took my break, all I could do was cry. I felt so helpless, not knowing how to change the situation. In my hurt and in my frustration, God was able to speak to me through his word, through the Colossians passage that was just read to you. We no longer live as we used to, but instead, if we are children of God, we have each been made new, no matter who we are, where we came from, or what we look like. For Christ is all and is in all. And as the people of God, we are to be like him, showing compassion and kindness, humility and gentleness, and patience, forgiving and bearing with one another. But even greater than all of these things, we are to show his love, which binds us all into one. What does the color of skin matter? One day, all of believers will spend all of eternity together. Black, white, Hispanic, such is the kingdom of heaven. But how often we forget this. You may say, what does speaking of equality for the races matter? African Americans won their rights. That ended 50 years ago. But we're on a journey, and this journey is like a hill. If we don't continue to climb, we will only slide back down again. We have already begun to regress. Instead of forced segregation, we now choose to segregate, content to stay where we are comfortable. Where is the most noticeable place of segregation? The church. The church, where we're to show the unrestricted love of Christ. Less than 6% of churches are multi-ethnic today. How is this a representation of the kingdom? This problem that we have is not a skin problem. It is a sin problem. After all, in the issue of skin, who is truly black and who is truly white? Who matches these colors? Instead, we are as God has created us, the way that we were intended to be. And when we are all together one day in heaven, we will each stand just as we are. So while the color of skin is not always black or white, the way that you treat people and whether or not you show the love of Christ is. Thank you.
And God has allowed me to go up to the mountain, and I've looked over, and I've seen the promised land. I may not get there with you, but I want you to know tonight that we as a people will get to the promised land. Ladies and gentlemen, these are the words of the teacher, the father, the pastor, and the leader, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Within a day of stating these words, the revolutionary, the doctor, the Nobel Peace Prize winner was assassinated. But why? Was it worth it in the end? I do not have time to go over all of these things. And despite the week I got studying the civil rights movement, I do not feel adequate for describing the plight for equality. I will basically be telling you about the two things that had the greatest impact on me while I was on the trip, which were the Martin Luther King Center in Atlanta, Georgia, and the Edmund Pettus Bridge in Selma, Alabama. But before I get into these things, I want to talk just briefly about where I was before I went on the trip. When I applied to go, I was really excited. I love history, particularly American history. But there were some stereotypes in my heart that needed addressed before I could go. Now, you should know, stereotypes are not necessarily racism, but they're assuming that certain people groups behave in certain ways, and I had to get rid of these before I could go. So, got on a plane, met up with everybody in South Carolina, and the next day we went to the Martin Luther King Center in Atlanta. And on the way, we watched documentaries about Dr. King, getting to see his life, his work, and some of his shortcomings made him so much more real than that third grade history class retelling of him we so often settle for. But one of King's talks really struck me, which came from his drum major speech, where he describes everybody as having this desire to stand out, and it is a good thing if God guides it. Otherwise, it's what we call narcissism. But from that day forward, I began to think and to pray about what kind of a drum major God wanted me to be. The center really helped bring this out, but King had so much potential. One of the youngest people to receive a Nobel Peace Prize. Had his doctorate by age 26. Author. Dr. King could have been one of the richest, most powerful African Americans of his time. Could have been a college president. World-renowned orator, but he chose to die in Memphis for the rights of sanitation workers, people we take for granted. If God called thee, Dr. King, to a life like this, I began to wonder what his plans were for the people around me, as well as myself. A couple days later, the next place and person we visited probably had the greatest impact on me. We went to Selma, Alabama, where we met Miss Joanne Bland. Now, do not be deceived by this photo. This picture might lead you to believe that Miss Bland is some tame old woman. She is just the opposite. The best way I can illustrate it to you is with a story. When we get to Selma, we picked up Miss Bland, and when we stopped at our first exhibit, she says, and I quote, "Okay, we in the hood. You see me run, you run. You see me put my hands up, you best put your hands up. And if I say get down, you had better get down because I am packing." She was just joking, of course. But what floored me about Miss Bland was when we went to lunch and she described for us what happened on Bloody Sunday. Earlier that week, a young man, Jimmy Lee Jackson, had been shot by a Marion police officer, but he died in Selma, and a protest march began in Selma with the final destination of Montgomery. But they had hardly gotten outside city limits when the notorious police chief, Jim Clark, stopped them at the Edmund Pettus Bridge. Clark, who was dressed like this, walked up and, forgive my language, said, "You niggers have 2 minutes to turn around." They got 30 seconds. Miss Bland, who was about 11 at the time, remembers trying to run from the police force in front of her, but another group of officers came from behind and started hitting the nonviolent protesters with billy clubs. Some of the officers were on horseback. Others were on foot. Miss Bland remembers hearing gunshots. No, they were not firearms. They were tear gas bottles popping. People were choking, getting savagely beaten. Miss Bland, this tough woman who had gotten thrown out of nonviolent protest training for biting someone on the knee, nearly cried. She recalled, "I can still hear the screams. I can still hear the screams." What really got to me was after everything, Miss Bland remembers laying on her 14-year-old sister's lap. I could feel her teardrops hitting her on the head. No, they were not teardrops. A police officer had bludgeoned her older sister so hard on the head that she bled as though she wept. I have a 16-year-old sister, and if anyone hit her so hard that she bled like she was sobbing, there's no way I could remain nonviolent. But God used this to humble me. I remember asking Mrs. Juanita Abernathy how she and the other protesters kept from retaliating physically. She told me it was because they had the real power. You see, the white supremacists were afraid, and the civil rights activists were not going to give in to fear, but they would win with the power of loving your enemy as yourself. So what? Aren't we already past this in the 21st century? No. And to live in such ignorance as I was is to spit in the face of the civil rights leaders. To spit in the face of those that had their lives stripped from them because they would not let a lie live forever, and ultimately to spit in the face of Jesus Christ so that the lie of racism and segregation could live no more. I beg you, do not make the same mistakes I have by giving into stereotypical thinking. Please, keep on marching, keep on walking, marching on to Freedom Land. Because, ladies and gentlemen, we are on a hill, the hill that God took Dr. King to the top of, that overlooks the Promised Land as he did with Moses. And on this mountaintop is not only Dr. King, but our triune God. And for a while, we as a people were running up this hill. But some of us have started walking. Others have even stopped. And there are those who have turned around and started going down the hill to join those who Dr. King would call our sick white brothers. I'm not telling you to say hello to people of a different hue than you every time you see them, because that would be condescending. And I am definitely not saying that we should be colorblind, because in colorblindness, we lose the good things God has created in our cultures. We may not get there this side of glory. I may not get there with you. But if justice is to ever roll down like water and righteousness like a mighty stream, then we as a people have got to try our hardest to get there. May God be with us.